or New Zealand should stop Pacifica countries being used as a political football. Political tensions and competition between powerful states have reached new heights in the Pacific, but there are regional mechanisms that New Zealand can deploy to help manage this competition and stand with our Pacifica neighbours. Joining us for a kōrero on this front is Associate Professor Guy Sinclair. Guy, tēnā koe. My name's Dale. Thanks for joining us here on Māori Radio. Ngā mihi.
It's lovely to be here.
Tēnā koe. I haven't got where you're working in my brief at the moment. Please, guys, just tell us where you work and what you do.
Yeah, sure. I'm an associate professor at Auckland Law School, University of Auckland, and I'm also the associate dean Pacific in the law school.
Tēnā koe. Māori are well used to being used as a political football. I know it's a slightly uncomfortable term, because it illustrates that you're easy beats for people to push your kaupapa and your people around. So we're not unfamiliar here. But what's happening in the Pacific and why are the big nations so interested? Here we have the issue with Kiribati, with Solomon Islands signing an arrangement, unsure of what depth it goes to, Guy, with China, and now overtures of similar with the Cook Islands. China is seen as an important trading partner with New Zealand, so it must grate them when there's also expressed internationally through the media nervousness about their intent. Talk to us about China, its role in the Pacific, and growing influence, please, Guy.
Sure, yeah. The Pacific is really becoming a more complex and crowded space from a geopolitical point of view. There's lots of different actors now, you know, interested in the Pacific, engaged in the Pacific, and that stretches from so-called traditional partners like the United States, Australia, New Zealand, United Kingdom, and so on, to others on the Pacific Rim like China, Japan, Taiwan, and even newer sort of states getting involved like India, Indonesia, international organizations, multinational companies. It's all sort of heating up. And the Pacific is, of course, a you know, huge area. It's vast, it's varied, so you can't sort of make broad generalizations about the whole thing. But I would say just in general terms, over the last decade, say, this sense of rivalry has been building up, and it's linked to concerns about the growing economic and military strength and influence of China, and I think to some extent about the sort of loss of influence by the United States and its allies. And yeah, there's no doubt that China is more interested in reaching sort of development and security arrangements with Pacific countries. And that's probably for the same reason that the US and its allies want to have those kinds of agreements with Pacific countries themselves. Things like access to economic resources. You know, we know the Pacific is extremely rich in mineral and timber and fish and potentially seabed resources. But also for security reasons. You know, China is a Pacific Rim country, and it sort of, I think, sees itself as surrounded by U.S. allies. And, you know, as the sort of the temperature heats up, both, you know, literally and metaphorically, you know, it wants to make friends and make alliances. So it's been trying to do that. As you said, 2023, it entered into a kind of a security agreement with the Solomon Islands, and it's tried to do that with other countries as well.
It does seem to be a playoff, and interestingly, you mentioned the economic and military might of China. Now the biggest naval operations for any country, and there's a nervousness, quite obviously, and particularly with the rhetoric that we're getting from Trump, tariffs, etc. But for our Pacifica peoples, they're just looking for support, and China offers them a chance for infrastructural development that seemingly they can't get elsewhere. So it's a big lure. What do you think is going to happen in this space going forward with Pacifica countries? Will these arrangements be cemented in, and will there be more independent Pacifica nations that might be tempted to mirror what the Cook Islands perhaps or the Solomon Islands have already done?
Look, it's hard to predict the future. I think so. As you say, you know, China's been in the region for a long time, actually. You know, I grew up in Papua New Guinea, and I remember 20, 30 years ago, you know, China was investing in infrastructure back then. And I think they're going to continue to do that. I think Pacific countries are looking for all the opportunities they can get, as they naturally will, right? I mean, they do get aid from the traditional partners, and Australia still by far is the biggest aid donor in the Pacific by a long shot. But they're looking for other opportunities, trade opportunities, also aid opportunities. And as you say, China offers a kind of an infrastructure option that they don't get from some other countries. So New Zealand, has traditionally given aid focused on things like health and education and governance. But these countries also, they want, ports and they want airports and they want things that help them to trade and to operate in the world. So I think if they don't get those from the traditional partners, they will be looking to China, and they have the right to do so as sovereign states. And I suppose that will cause some nervousness in places like, Wellington and Washington, D.C. and Canberra.
Well, we note, Guy, that the Trump administration is going to freeze U.S. foreign aid. How does that affect the Pacific?
Well, as I say, I mean, United States is not actually the largest donor in the Pacific. I mean, just to take 2022 as an example, Australia gave $1.5 billion to Pacific countries in aid, essentially. And the United States only gave something like $250 million, right? So there's a huge difference. China's not even, sorry, United States is not even the second biggest donor, and China comes slightly ahead of the United States at the moment. So, but as I say, the Pacific is really varied, and it's hard to make those generalizations. There'll be some countries that rely more on U.S. aid, and they will, if the freeze continues, of course they will suffer. And I think more broadly, the freeze sends a kind of a signal about the United States' attitude to the Pacific, along with other parts of the world, right? Which is something like, don't count on us, right? And Pacific countries will hear that, and they will react to that. And part of the reaction might be to look for other partners. And China will hear that, and Australia will hear that, and Japan will hear that, and so on and so forth. So I think some of those countries will see that as an opening for more engagement in the Pacific, and some of that engagement will be, really positive and welcomed, and some of it won't be because, obviously Pacific countries are not happy about the increasing militarization and the threat of, military conflict in the region.
Tēnā koe, do you sense that this unilateral move by the Cook Islands and forging a relationship with China without consultation with New Zealand is going to sit very uncomfortably? I'm talking with the Foreign Affairs Minister later in the program, Guy. Is there a chance that what's deemed to be a very disrespectful move could result in New Zealand considering cutting the Cooks loose?
I'd be surprised if that happens. I think it's unfortunate that this is all sort of playing out in public in a way. I think there's a few, I'm an international lawyer, and I think there's a few principles that it's important to remember. The first is that the Cook Islands is an independent sovereign state, right? In principle, it has full autonomy in its foreign policy, but it is in a kind of a free association relationship with New Zealand. And what that means is, firstly, New Zealand has a constitutional responsibility to respond to requests for assistance from the Cook Islands in relation to things related to foreign affairs. But secondly, there's this sort of partnership agreement that says that, there will be consultation between the two parties. They will consult regularly. So there's a sort of a balance of ideas there. On the one hand, we need to bear in mind Cook Islands is sovereign, it's independent, it has responsibility for its own foreign affairs. On the other hand, it can call on New Zealand for assistance, and there is an obligation to consult regularly. Now, what that consultation really means is probably a matter of practice, and that's probably where the issues have arisen. Certain practices become habit and become routine, and if they're not followed, if a big change happens, then that causes some issues. But I think New Zealand wants to think carefully about how it relates to other Pacific countries, especially countries like Cook Islands, which it's had such a close relationship with for such a long time, because that also sends a signal to the rest of the Pacific about how New Zealand sees other countries.
It's been an interesting kōrero. Thank you for sharing some perspectives with us, Guy. All the best of the day and week ahead. Mary Ole Kakwe, Chief. Thank you for joining us. It's Guy Sinclair, Associate Professor and Associate Dean of Pacifica at Auckland Law School.